This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll talk about the 5th Annual Millennial Awards, and Jessica Rosegard chats with Pat Forbes about Louisiana's flood recovery efforts. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans, but first... A small community in La Place between Baton Rouge and New Orleans is suing a chemical plant for polluting the neighborhood. Denka Company has produced chemicals for synthetic rubber about 50 years, but it turns out it's pretty dangerous. WWNO's Tegan Wendland talked with advocate reporter Della Hassell, who is following the story.
Della, there are a ton of chemical plants up and down the river. What does Denka actually make?
Denka makes a chemical called chloroprene, which is used to make neoprene, which is used to make a synthetic rubber.
For like scuba diving suits or what?
Scuba diving suits, braces, for knees, things like that.
So Denka has been cited by the Environmental Protection Agency for leaking chloroprene, which is a likely carcinogen. How dangerous is this chemical and what does it actually do to people?
That depends on who you ask. So residents say they have long felt effects of chloroprene. Data shows that the chloroprene emissions have reached up to 765 times the level that the EPA says is acceptable.
And that's the amount, 760 times what a person should be exposed to.
Correct. 765 times what a person should be exposed to. But it's important to note that the data has been all over the place. 765, that number is a spike. There have also been dips. At times, there have been no detectable levels of chloroprene in the air at all. And the state says that what we need to look at is long-term exposure and a consistent level of exposure.
So how does it actually affect people? What might they experience? Are they going to get headaches? Are they going to get cancer? What?
Well, at that level, if they're exposed to that same level over a lifetime, residents could be exposed to risk of liver cancer, risk of lung cancer, some other cancers. Short-term exposure can cause headaches, dizziness, respiratory irritation. There's also been some links to possible immune disorders, things like that.
Okay. And you actually spent some time in some of these communities where the EPA found, for example, that people in St. John the Baptist Parish face the highest risk of cancer from airborne pollutants in the country. So were people worried about this? What were they saying? What were they talking about?
Sure. So residents are extremely concerned about the data coming back. They say that for years, people there have felt sick and they haven't really been able to explain why. They've always suspected the chemical plant. Now they think the data shows that the chemical plant is producing large amounts of chloroprene that could be the cause of their sickness. It's important to note that the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality disagrees with some of the things that the residents are saying. They've accused the residents of fear-mongering, and they say that there isn't enough data to prove that these high levels of chloroprene are actually negatively affecting health. And they say it's important to note that the data spikes and dips over time. So 765 times the amount that causes risk of cancer has been at peaks. But over time, when you average out all the data, the emissions have been much less.
So the LDEQ is arguing that this isn't as dangerous as the EPA is saying it is?
The LDEQ is arguing that it's not as dangerous as the residents are saying that it is. The EPA has also said that more data needs to be examined to determine what long-term risks are. Long-term risks are not very well understood with chloroprene. It was only recently categorized as a likely carcinogen.
So where is the chemical actually coming from?
So the chemical's coming from the plant, which has been found to possibly violate the Clean Air Act up to 50 times. A report came out last year. Investigators went out into the plant and discovered a bunch of things, including potential leaks with pipes that contained chemicals, things like that. The plant contests the findings. They say that some of the leaks that were supposedly found weren't actually leaks, but all of that is still being investigated.
has this always been a concern in the community, or how long has this problem potentially been going on?
It's potentially been going on for nearly 50 years because that's how long chloroprene has been emitted into the air from this plant. Chloroprene was only reclassified as a likely carcinogen in 2010, and that's when the EPA and the LDEQ started more examining this plant and seeing what problems might exist.
So the EPA does this national air toxic assessment, and they found high levels of the chemical here because of the plant. And then the EPA and the state intervened, and they came up with this consent decree with DENCA. So what is next?
Well, DENCA is working to reduce emissions by 85% by the end of 2017. DENCA seems confident that that will lower the chloroprene emissions to an acceptable level. Residents disagree. They don't think it's going to lower chloroprene enough for them to be safe.
What options do the residents have? Move away?
Move away. I mean, they filed this lawsuit. One of the requests in the lawsuit is for a preliminary injunction, which means that the plant could be asked to stop producing the chemical or at least lower emissions until an acceptable level is found from the data. It remains to be seen whether or not that will happen.
And might this be part of a much bigger problem? You reported that more than 5,000 of the chemical plants and other facilities here in the state broke environmental laws like this over the past 3 years. 5,000, that seems like such a crazy number.
They were all cited for various infractions, yes. 5,000 does seem like a big number. I've talked to environmentalists here in Louisiana, the Louisiana Environmental Action Network. They say that it's not unusual for plants to be found to have violations and that those violations are usually resolved with consent decrees, things like that.
It just seems like maybe this is an enforcement problem.
Environmentalists and residents would say it's an enforcement problem. The state has denied that there is an enforcement problem.
What do they say the problem is?
The state says that they go in and do inspections regularly and that they find issues when there are issues to be found.
I'm totally nerding out for your investigative reporting right now. Thank you, Della Hassell, reporter with The Advocate.
Thank you.
Support for the Coastal Desk comes from the Walton Family Foundation, the Koipu Foundation, the Greater New Orleans Foundation, and you, our local listeners. For the past 5 years, the Millennial Awards has honored dynamic young professionals who make significant strides in the community and in the business sector. They also honor individuals who serve as cultural ambassadors. Joining me now to talk more about the celebration is Michelle Tarallo, Director of Special Events with the Spears Group.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So this celebration has been going on for the last 5 years. Let's talk about the emergence of this celebration in itself, right? And where it started and where it is now.
So the Spears Group, we started the Millennial Awards about 5 years ago. Cleveland Spears is the president and CEO of Spears Group. He is a minority business owner, a young man, successful, and I think recognized the fact that there was no platform to shine light on and recognize the successes of young professionals in New Orleans. He, you know, was successful himself and has a lot of peers and colleagues that have been making really great strides in the economy here in New Orleans. And so that's where the concept came from. Mm-hmm. Spears Group has a lot of event products that bring people together. This is one specifically about bringing people together to celebrate the achievements of young professionals in New Orleans, which we know is a very important part of growing the economy here. And as millennials, we love a reason to celebrate.
Yeah, let's talk about this generation specifically, right?
Sure.
And the impact that it has had on the city.
Yeah, so millennials are defined as between the ages, I think, born in 2000 up to the age of 40, right? So we talk a lot about New Orleans, the brain drain.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about what we need to do to get the young professionals back here contributing to the economy. The millennial generation is that group of people. So we have a really robust young professional environment here in New Orleans, and we want to put platforms out there, have a reason to get together and celebrate as a generation. Mm-hmm. And currently what we're doing to aid the economy and also setting examples for future young professionals to show what sort of impacts young professionals can have, not only on their personal careers and the companies they work for, mm-hmm. but collectively, whether it's through an economic development organization, a law firm, a young professional organization, or volunteerism in the community, like what actual impacts you can see on the economy at a young age. Like, yeah. We think it's really important to show those relevant successes and achievements.
Let's talk about the categories for the awards.
Yeah, so we have a range of categories, 18 to be specific. Some are very specific to industry, like journalism, digital media, law. We also have categories that are a little more broad and overreaching than that, such as innovation and change maker. Those are not specific to one industry and more look at the achievements of either an entrepreneur type of person or someone who works in an industry like energy, but has truly changed the way that that company does either business or changed the way that they have approached a certain position, or this person has made change in their community through volunteerism, through mentorship, through extracurriculars. So really interesting overreaching categories like that.
Community game changers are being awarded.
Yeah. So game changers, another one is our innovation. Chevron is a powered by human energy innovation award is a category this year, and just different ways of approaching things that have been done the same for many, many years. Now, we're, as millennials, especially the ones who are in the second generation of work, you know, 30s going into the 40s, we're taking over. And, you know, it's important to recognize the way that things are changing as our generation grows and achieves more.
Now, how does this nomination process work?
Yeah, so nominations are open to the public. We ran nominations for about 30 days on our website, and we sent out a bunch of, you know, notifications to young professional organizations, different businesses in the community specific to industries, and the public can nominate as many as they want. Some categories had 50 nominations, some categories had 15. All of these nominees, every single one, is pooled by category, and we have a panel of judges comprised of professionals, colleagues, past winners, a distinguished panel that evaluates all of the nominees and vote to determine a top three in each category. Those three finalists are all recognized at the awards ceremony, with one winner being named that evening.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
So for the first time, you guys are partnering with the Emerge Summit. How important is this partnership, and what makes it a perfect match for the Millennial Awards?
Right. So the Emerge Summit is something conceived and conceptualized by GNO Inc., a great organization here in New Orleans. This specific event is targeted at empowering and giving another platform for young professionals to network, to collaborate, and to experience some professional development. We have a huge outpouring of support from the young professional organization community within New Orleans. They're all, you know, sponsoring and partnering with us for this summit, and we really think it's a great opportunity to capitalize on the success of the Millennial Awards by turning the weekend into something that's about millennials professionally, networking, and, you know, recognizing their achievements.
And there is a special networking event this weekend.
Correct. So if you are registered for the summit and or a finalist at the Millennial Awards, you are invited to attend the Millennials Meet Happy Hour. It's sort of the kickoff event for the whole weekend. It's at the Ace Hotel Thursday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. We'll have all of the speakers from the Emerge Summit there, all of the sponsors from both Emerge and Millennial Awards. It's going to be a really great networking opportunity with fellow young professionals.
And the Millennial Awards is actually closing all of this out.
Right. So the Emerge Summit is on Friday at the Ace Hotel from about 8 to 5 p.m. Lots of great content. You can still register. And then this all culminates with the award celebration on Saturday, July 15th at the Civic. It kicks off at 6 p.m. with our Best Millennial Restaurant Competition, which is super fun. We have six restaurants that come in and put their best dish forward, and everyone gets to taste and vote. And then we have the awards from 7 to 8. And then DJ Soul Sister comes out with some live music.
My absolute favorite.
I know. So we're going to have a really great party. And again, you can buy tickets for both. If you actually purchase both Summit and Awards tickets together, it's discounted at $25 each. So I really encourage everyone to come to support their friends and colleagues. You can check out a list of all of the finalists on the website right now. So we encourage everyone to come and just support this platform for young professional development in New Orleans.
Sounds like a great time. Michelle Tarallo, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. See you there.
Michelle Tarallo is the Director of Special Events for the Spears Group. The Millennial Awards and Emerge Summit happens this weekend. Learn more at millennialsmeet.com.
Clap your hands now, people, clap now. Clap your hands now, people, clap your hands. Clap your hands now, people, clap now. Clap your hands now, people, clap your hands. Clap your hands now, people, clap now. Clap your hands now, people, clap your hands. Clap your hands now, people, clap now. Clap your hands now, people, clap your hands.
86,000 homes in Louisiana had damage from flooding last year. State recovery officials are working to distribute federal recovery dollars to flood victims. WWNO's Jessica Rosegard sat down with Pat Forbes, Executive Director of the Office of Community Development, to discuss the ongoing recovery efforts.
The Office of Community Development is really focused on getting the word out about the Homeowner Flood Damage Survey. Give me a brief update on where things stand in regards to the phase of recovery and survey participation.
We went over 30,000 surveys this past week that we've had submitted, and some 2,900 folks have completed their applications at this point. We know there are a lot more people out there who are eligible for funding, though, who have not completed the survey yet. The survey doesn't make you stop any work on your house. The survey doesn't cost you anything but about 5 or 10 minutes, and it is critical that homeowners who flooded complete it. There are a few reasons for that. Whether you think you're eligible or not, you may be wrong. You may very well be eligible for funding right now, but in addition to that, as additional funds become available, we are expanding the population to include other formerly ineligible applicants. So folks need to get the survey filled out so they can be in the queue when we do expand. This process provides us data and information about the overall state of recovery in the state, where people are in general. And what that does is gives the governor and the congressional delegation information to go back to Capitol Hill and make the further case for additional recovery funds for the state.
Senator Cassidy was very blunt at his town hall meeting a few weeks ago that you were at when he said that if the state can't demonstrate a need, then Congress will not be authorizing additional funding for the recovery. Based on the task force website, the state is still about $1 billion short on the homeowner portion of the recovery projections. So how concerned are you that the state won't get the money that it needs?
I'm confident that we'll get the money that we need. We need folks to fill out those surveys and help us understand where is everybody. I'm also confident that the delegation and the governor can go back and try to get us more help if we can demonstrate through these processes with real data, because that's what works, is real information, real data. If we can go do that, that we can get additional funding.
So this is really one of those times when the greatest thing that you need is community and personal participation.
Yes, participate for your own benefit, because we want to bring the money here to help you. Even if you paid for it out of your own pocket, that's money that's not going into the Louisiana economy over the next year because you've spent it on your house. So we want to help people all that we can, and we have a wide range of eligibilities. And even if you've completed your house, even if you had flood insurance, it's still possible that we're going to be able to get assistance to you.
You mentioned the time that it takes to get the funding. The funding is being made available through community development block grants, which is a mechanism that wasn't actually developed for disaster recovery, but has been frequently used that way. So what are your thoughts on that CDBG grants are being used in a way that they weren't meant to be?
I think that CDBG grants in and of themselves can be effective. It's just that the process for allocating and distributing CDBG grants is not tuned to disaster in the way that it can be. HUD has certainly, and Congress have certainly, acknowledged that since back at 9/11 and then Katrina and Rita, and have continued to tweak their systems and put new waivers in place for disasters. But on some level, the processes need a lot more than tweaking to make this a time-effective process for funding long-term recovery.
So we're sitting here 11 months since the flood. What is the biggest challenge that your office is facing at this point in the recovery process?
Well, standing up a program of this size always has its challenges, but that's not anything that we didn't expect. Certainly, every disaster is different, and every disaster requires a different response and program for recovery. Getting people to understand that our program can help them and to get them to come into the program and fill out that survey, that's one thing. Funding availability, it would be great to know that we have all the funds that we need up front in that process of people planning their own family's recovery. It's important to them to know as early as possible what kind of funds might be available to them. And right now, we're only able to fund half of the construction cost for folks who are at above a certain income level rather than 100%, which is what we would like to do. That's what they lost. We're only funding 25% of reimbursements for people who have completed their work for most folks. And we would love to reimburse them everything that they spent.
And ultimately, say everybody fills out the survey and you can show Congress that there's this great need, that there will potentially be another allocation and that you could potentially reimburse from that 25 up to 100%. Is that the goal?
That's the goal. The goal, we may never get to the 100%, but to be able to demonstrate unmet need beyond what HUD has calculated and what Congress sees at this point, and to be able to then get additional funds and be able to reset policies in the program such that we can, in fact, pay people 100% of what it costs them to rebuild their house. That's really, frankly, the biggest risk in this recovery that we're doing this time, is those folks who can only get 50% of the money from us. If they can't come up with that other 50%, they don't have the resources to complete their house. And so that's, like, from a community development standpoint, our biggest risk is having neighborhoods damaged by the fact that there are houses in there where people couldn't get across the finish line of rebuilding.
Really, your goal is to not have what we have in New Orleans, which is 12 years after Katrina, neighborhoods with entire blocks of blighted properties.
That's exactly right. I mean, we can look at St. Bernard Parish, we can look at the Lower Ninth Ward, and see that they have populations that were devastated and have not returned to pre-storm. From the perspective of allocating limited resources, we always have to look at how do we make this recovery even so that we don't lose neighborhoods like that. That's why you'll see, even though we have a shortage of funds, we still have some funding in small business program. We have considerable funding in rental program. It is a balancing act to make sure that the businesses that feed a recovery, child care, health care, grocery stores, gas stations, those things that we need in a community for people to keep working, keep living in their neighborhoods, keep going to their church, schools, all those things are absolutely critical to the recovery too. But from the homeowner housing perspective, it's about making sure that we can help every single homeowner possible get back in their home so that we don't have those neighborhood impacts.
Pat Forbes, the Executive Director of the Louisiana Office of Community Development, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Affected homeowners are urged to fill out the state survey online at restore.la.gov or by phone at 866-735-2001. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic?
Send an email to Janae at WWNO. That's J-A-N-A-E at WWNO.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows and be sure to catch us next week right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us.